Chris.
Marcus.
We are back. It's a little pocket awareness, guys. You guys already know what it is. You're, you know, quarterback podcast, your favorite with me and Chris. We're back. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at the so that's me on Twitter. Sorry about that, guys. That's my first time messing it up, but at ALPA underscore QB1, right? Instagram at ALPA underscore QB1. Facebook, a little pocket awareness on Facebook. Make sure you listen to this on iTunes. Okay. Hit the subscribe button. Make sure if you, you know, are listening on Spotify, go ahead and hit the download button. Make sure you follow me and Chris on Twitter at King Manelos for Chris, at the Mark John NFL for me. All right. And we got a special guest today. So we're really excited about that. We got my man, Mark Schofield. So definitely excited to talk quarterbacks and, you know, pick his brain and see what's going on in the NFL right now. So you get, this is going to be a really great episode, I believe. But Chris, how are you feeling, man? I mean, Packers won?
Packers won. They did their best to give me a heart attack. I'm going to say they did their best. Mason Crosby did his best.
Yes.
He took, what was that, 2012 and like, took that entire season of field goals that he's missed and put it into like a 5-minute period. So
doesn't he do this like every 6 years? I swear he did this before.
He did it before. It was like 10 years ago, man. Like,
I swear to God, he's done the same exact thing.
This happened. He almost lost his job. They stuck with him, and then he turned back to the perfect guy that he is. But last week, man, he just had a big giant hiccup. So hopefully that doesn't come back. I think hopefully he's got it out of his system. There were 5 missed field goals in a row, and he missed an extra point. Now, granted, he didn't miss all 5 by himself. The Bengals team, you know, they went ahead and missed it. They even celebrated one of the misses. So
I know I saw that the center was or one of the tackles was pissed that the dude was celebrating. I'm like, bro,
yeah. Yeah, had no clue. But yeah, no, that stressed me out. So, I'd rather have my weekend where my team is 4-1 and we're just stressed out about a few field goals than your weekend.
Oh yeah, my weekend was bad, bro. It was bad. And then they played terrible. They looked awful. And
well, had to kind of expect what was going to happen.
That's what we talked about on Tape Don't Lie. BD was, you know, he said that we won't know how they feel until they play. And because if they don't beat the Bears, then we know that they're in trouble. Because they still could have beat the Bears. They played like absolute trash. And they still had a chance to win that game.
Yes,
so,
they did.
So, you know, like if it really affected them, and then now he's out, and I'm happy about it because I'm tired of Gruden. I mean, Gruden's just all entertainment. I feel like he was like all media. And, you know, I think they're going to get back to football. And, you know, I dug into Greg Olsen's offense a little bit, and I think he's a little bit of a fraud. I think he's a little bit of a liar. But this is my offense. I'm like, is it, bro? I don't know if it is. I wouldn't, you know. It looks like you're running the Jacksonville offense that got Blake Bortles 35 touchdowns. It's like, that's what it looks like you're running to me. And then you just want to, you know, do your ugly run plays with it. So that's I'm happy he's gone because he sucks in the red zone. His run game is terrible. And, you know, so I'm glad he's out of here. And then he's like the worst situational coach too. Like he goes up 10 and he's like, oh, we're up 20-10. Go, let's go home. And he just starts running the football repeatedly. So, and he's blowing so many leads that way. Sometimes, I'm good. Thank you. Get out of here. Let's see what we can do. Maybe Greg Olsen is a little better of a play caller, which I believe he is from what I've seen. I mean, anybody who could get 35 touchdowns out of Blake Bortles. it was crazy. I wouldn't like this track record, bro. Like Josh Freeman's best year was Greg Olsen. Like that little, like, he fooled there. He's fooled
in Tampa.
People. Yeah. He's fooled people with some bad quarterbacks, man. He's created buzz around terrible quarterbacks. So that's what I was like. I was like, you know what? Okay, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I think he's the guy behind Cars Development too. It's obvious. I mean, Gruden does have a track record with Josh Freeman. Like, who gets Josh Freeman to throw 6 picks in a season? That's what I saw, I was like, well, maybe you're like underrated. And he was the quarterback coach for Jared Goff 2017. He's the quarterback coach. So Goff's
when they went to the Super Bowl.
No, when Goff.
No.
When he had that first improvement.
Okay. Right?
That real big improvement.
I got you.
That was Greg Olsen. because he has like a whole bunch of cool like pressure drills. Like he helps quarterbacks like John Gruden, which it now pisses me off that John Gruden, I watched his coaching clinic and he basically just showed Greg Olsen's drills. So he's just a fraud, bro. He's a fraud. I really feel like he came into you know the job, called Greg Olsen and was like, bro, I need offense. So what do you got? Swear to God, that's what I kind of feel like.
That's, you're not wrong though. Like if you think about it, the man, when he was the head coach, when he was Chucky, when he was that offensive guru, that was a long time ago.
I know.
Like you gotta, that's one way to grow and become relevant again. Just use the other guy's stuff.
Exactly. And I think that, like the second year he started doing his stupid stuff, but in 2018 they're really spread, but now they're not spread anymore. They're not as spread out. And they're more like, I mean, they're spread out now, but it's like now there's three tight ends spread out. And you know, Greg Olsen was like, I'm having all my wide receivers and Jared Cook. So it definitely was Greg Olsen's offense the first year. I mean, it's maybe the second, and you know, this last 2 years, it's probably a mixture. It's probably like, okay, I see what you're doing, Greg. Let me put
my, I got it from here.
Yeah. Which, sure. Yeah, sure you do. That's why now they can't run the ball at all. Because yeah, let me run my run plays, not yours, Greg. My great run plays that are all look the same from the same area with the same person. And then why can't I run the football? Ugh. Why is everybody crashing the line? Maybe because they know it's coming. Maybe. Yeah. So that's what I hope to change. I hope there's more creativity in the run game. It's more like, you know, because like even the Mariota plays, bro. That's why I was so mad about it. Because I went back and you know, I watched the Jaguars, I watched Blake Bortles, which is terrible. It's just I can't get that time back. I gotta tell you the story, Chris. Because the first game I watched was Green Bay versus Jacksonville, week one, 2016, right? And I was watching Blake Bortles, and I just got tired of it. And then, you know, Aaron Rodgers' part came on, and I just, like, watched him for, like, as I made a bunch of clips. He has some crazy throws. You probably remember some of these. Remember the one where he was, like, he was getting pulled down, and he just, like, threw it to Davante Adams? You remember that throw?
That's been a lot of what's happened lately, just in general.
it was like Davante Adams was really young back then, though. Jordy Nelson was still the man over there. And like Randall Cobb and like Devonta was coming up, but he had some like that was like vintage Aaron Rodgers tape, bro. Like he was basically just carrying Mike McCarthy at that point. That's basically what I was watching.
Yeah, I think that was probably the last year that he was sick of it, because it wasn't it the year after or the year it was either the next season or the season after that he led the league in throwaways by like triple.
Yeah, that was the relax year. I believe, and they went 4-6.
The relax year was when with all the throwaways.
Oh no, when he predicted they'll go to the playoffs. That's 2016.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The relax. Yeah, you got, went out. You got some relax throws. You got some of them relax throws.
Bro, I was like, man, this is prime. I watched. It was funny, man. I couldn't watch Blake Bortles that long. I couldn't without seeing some good quarterback play. So I had to watch Aaron. I had to do it. I couldn't, man. And that's what I was talking about. Like, if you were at, you know, some guy was showing like Greg Olsen's yards per game or whatever. I'm like, his quarterback was Blake Bortles. And he would just miss out. And Greg Olsen's like scheming up Allen Robinson, getting him one on ones and scheming him up. And, you know, and Blake is just.
Sail it.
You know, what was he supposed to do? Mm-hmm. That's why there's a funny dynamic, right? Because Gus Bradley fired Greg Olsen in 2016 after they started like 2-6. You know, so basically Gus Bradley like blamed him for the offense taking. Uh-huh. So I think that's why Gus Bradley wasn't the coach, because I think they went with somebody else because, like, you know, Greg Olsen's like, you know, I'm going to work for this guy. This guy's an idiot. He fired me. He has Blake Bortles as his quarterback. Fired me. like I'm the problem.
All right.
Like, I'm the guy. So, yeah, so I'm kind of excited about Greg Olsen, to be honest. I'm a little excited about him. Maybe okay. More than I should be. But I just, you know, once I studied his track record, like, he even got, like, 4,400 yards out of Mark Bulger.
At the end of his career.
Yeah, at the end of his career. Mark Bulger's end of his career. Last year, his last great year in St. Louis is Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen's
the only. You did some digging.
Marcus. I did.
You did some digging.
I wanted to make sure. It bothers me because I'm the only person in Raiders Twitter or Raiders media that did any digging on him. So they all just assume that like Carr's taking over the playbook. Like, no, it's not, bro. They're running his pass plays. I swear, like they're his pass plays. I mean, the run plays are Gruden's. They're his pass plays, though. They're not like.
Yeah, well, I hope he does a better job with utilizing Waller because I haven't liked the way that they've been using him the last few weeks.
No, bro. And then they didn't like chucking it deep. Carr's turned to Russell Wilson. I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know if it's like him like being mad at Gruden for doing what he's doing lately, but like he's gone full Russell Wilson. I watched him last week just stare at a hitch route and say no, and I'm gonna go to Darren Waller, and then he missed it. I'm like, bro, we need a first down, not a touchdown. Russell Wilson, calm down. Derek Wilson, calm down. he's like rolling around, he's like dodging guys, he's rolling out, throwing deep, and everybody's still mad at him. So I think it's funny. Everybody still hates him. I registered, they just ignore it. We need a mobile quarterback. I'm like, did you not just watch him dodge three guys and then throw it outfield and complete a pass? Or are you getting a drink? Is that what you're doing? Like, I don't get it. His discourse kills me. I'm like, this dude is playing like how you want to, he's frustrating me. You guys shouldn't be frustrated. I'm frustrated.
I'm frustrated.
Because like that one play, Mr. Runs, bro. Like, just throw it to King at Drake. You're under right pressure. There. Throw it to Drake. And then Drake might get 15, and then you're still going. We're still moving. We're still on schedule. Mm-hmm. No. He wants Henry Ruggs, who's not even open yet. And he's going to anticipate it. It's like, I'm in it. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's getting cocky because he anticipated that. I can anticipate this window, so I'm going to throw it here, and he's going to go get it. Bro, relax, man. Can you relax a little bit? You're getting too cocky with the anticipation, and you can.
Well, everybody was barking about how great he was after three games. So,
and now he's missing because he was hitting the throws. He was hitting them.
Yeah, yeah.
He's passing up stuff, rolling around and hitting it.
Yeah.
Now he's passing up stuff, but it's the exact thing. It is. It trips me out, and we need to get some other stuff. But it trips me out because Raiders fans are pissed that they're scoring 30 points a game. And now they're scoring 9-14. And I'm just thinking, what happens at the end of the year with the Seahawks? They have those stretch where they score like 10 points a game. It's the same thing. If you rely on explosive plays and you can't just move the ball, and you're gonna find a team that's not gonna let you get explosive plays, and you're gonna start losing.
Yep. Yep.
It's pretty simple. All right. Let's before we get to our guests, let's get to some of these other games we got this week, Chris. So we got
two pretty big matchups this week.
Yeah, we got Chargers versus Ravens, which I don't know why is that not Sunday night. Why is Bills Titans Sunday night? I guess that sounded cool at the beginning.
Well, it did at the beginning of the year. It sounded really cool at the beginning of the year.
Bills are gonna beat them like 44-0 or something. Why did they kill? I told you about the Bills killing people. I told you, Chris. You didn't believe me. You didn't believe me. I'm still not there.
I'm still not there on Allen. I can't do it yet. You got me. You got me on last week.
I was still
on the Chiefs.
It is the Bills.
Yeah,
and the Chiefs are going to ruin Patrick Mahomes this year. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to.
He's going to cause a lot of problems if he keeps trying to score 21 points every single play.
He probably feels like he has to at this point with the way the defense is playing. Yeah, he's gonna be in press mode all year.
Though that offense has always been just regular like that. Like, I don't know why he feels like he's got to start pressing because they've always been able to score. So he just needs to get back into rhythm.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I agree with that. He's got to get back into rhythm, get back into his game, and realize that he's still playing well. I saw some stats. He's the first guy.
I mean, he's got more turnovers than he's ever had the season already, basically.
Lucky. He's not as lucky.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
But, there's some Chiefs fan, that was mad at him. Like, why? Like, first of all, come on, man. Don't be mad at a quarterback who has his first two bad games in three seasons and talk about, his stats don't matter. Yeah, some guys said stats don't matter, wins do. I'm like, what is this record?
Yeah, you want to talk about wins? Go ahead, talk about wins.
And how his stats leave. That was the most ridiculous thing I ever seen. But so we got Chargers versus Ravens. Chargers are they're the hot team. Everybody loves Brandon Staley's crazy self and all of his crazy quotes. And of course, everybody loves the Golden Boy Justin Herbert, and he's coming. to face the, you know, Lamar Jackson,
man,
and the Ravens,
the reinvigorated Lamar Jackson.
All right, so you know, Lamar Jackson, I think he's going to keep the Ravens in this game, but I don't think they play too much cover zero. They're not. Maybe it's too much. This is going to be a
The way that Herbert gets the ball out,
yeah,
it's going to be.
Unless
I don't think it's going to be a bloodbath. I think it's going to be a shootout because that Chargers defense is not. I mean, didn't they lose Murray in the middle of the field?
Yeah, they can't stop the run. So like when they played the Browns, well, the Browns put a 42 on them. Like Baker Mayfield didn't really do anything. I mean, he had a couple slants, but basically Baker Mayfield here you go, Nick Chubb, and Nick Chubb was just run because they can't stop the run because just like we'll talk about later, Mark. I mean, teams aren't trying to stop them run. Nobody cares anymore. Like every defense I watch, man. Like, how can you beat them? Run the ball. I swear to God, it's like every single defense, like the top ones, like the top 10 defenses you can think of in the NFL, the way you beat them is run the football. That's why teams like the Browns still find ways to win like 11 games. But when they get in the playoffs, you know, you have to throw these days. You cannot just, this is not the 90s where you could just, you know, hand the ball off to Eric Dickerson and Eric Dickerson's going to carry you all the way. Cause then Derrick Henry almost carried the Titans. And then what happened? Ryan Tannehill had to play quarterback and they didn't go to Super Bowl. So
it's
all these teams are set up to stop the run. So you play it as a pass to me. So you play a team with the Browns and they just punch you in the mouth and you just get beat up. So that's the other side.
The Ravens are also a team that will punch you in the mouth with a running game. Mm-hmm. Don't they have a record of like over 20 games with 100 yards rushing?
They lost it last week.
Because they lost it? Because karma bit them for the week before when they ran it on fourth down at the end of the game instead of taking a knee. But also karma doesn't bite them because the Broncos used three timeouts to score one more time when they were down two scores at the end of the game and they had no way of winning. So I don't know. They lost it this week, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a team that had a pretty regular 100-yard game. I mean, I think that they're going to stick to the run in the game plan against the Chargers, and I still see it as a shootout.
The Chargers
last week was.
I mean, I put that picture on Twitter. You know, we posted it, man. The Chargers play defense like that against everybody. So too pissed high, Raiders couldn't run.
No linebackers.
No
linebackers. Four down linemen.
It's literally an invite. And they've almost lost two games. Like if the Browns could play defense and could stop Justin Herbert, then it
would well, if they didn't games. Get if they didn't get pass interference called on a cornerback that was literally getting dragged to the ground by the wide receiver.
They get all the calls.
They got gifted that game.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. They love Herbert. They love everybody. Like I said, Derwin James. We talked about that throw. Remember we talked about last week? How about Derek Carr like forced a throw to Derwin James? We talked about that throw, right? Did you know Derwin James was holding him like by his jersey?
Waller?
Yeah, the whole time.
I mean, I believe it.
That's why the Chargers scare me. Because the Chargers are secret dirty. They are. They're secret dirty. And nobody's going to find out until, like, you know, the 2013 Seahawks, where, you know, they were dirty too. I mean, they used to pass it through every play.
Big time. Big time. They had so many penalties called against them for pass interference that they literally stopped calling pass interference so that the game would end.
Exactly.
That's
And the league had to change its rules.
Yeah.
And that's what the Chargers are going to do because the Chargers are dirty, bro. They run stunts. They'll hold your linemen. Dirty. They're dirty. I hate calling them a dirty team because
it's not dirty.
They're not going to hit you in the knee or anything.
It's just manipulative dirty.
Like if you're not a ref looking for it.
Manipulation.
Because refs aren't looking for defensive holding. That's my
problem. They're doing hashtag we'll see if you watch us.
Call if you want. Who's going to call that out? Be a man. Get off it. Be a man. You get the lineman just like trying to grab the stunt. He's like just he's acting like he's bull rushing. Whatever, bro. I see what you're doing. But anyways, it's on tape. I see it. You know, it was funny because then I actually looked up the rule book. I was so it bothered me so much. I looked up the rule book, bro. I had to go to the rule book. I watched the video.
You don't see it called anymore, man. They don't call defensive holding anymore. They don't do it.
Exactly. Brandon Staley knows that.
Just like in the interior offensive line, man, a defender will throw a leg out, trip somebody.
Yeah.
You don't see it in there.
Yeah. And that's what it goes back to Gruden being predictable that week, because they were holding them when they were trying to run inside zone. So they would know they were going to run inside zone. And, you know, inside zone, the guy's supposed to get up. You know, just get one guy.
Yeah, I got to get to the linebacker. Yeah. Chip and go. Chip and go.
Or no, you're not.
Grab that arm. Grab that arm. You ain't going anywhere. Oh. Yeah.
-1 yard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dirty, brother. Secret dirty. It's like sly dirty. It's like he's clever dirty.
I got you.
That's a scary dude, man. He scares me, Brandon Staley. He's too reserved in like press conferences.
You watch
him in the locker room, and he's just this crazy psycho man. It's a scary dude. That means he's a crazy psycho man in the coaching offices, hyping up his team and telling them a bunch of that's about the Joey Bosa thing. I'm sure he told Joey Bosa that, because usually guys are, these teams, they're reflection of their coaches.
Absolutely.
Right? 100%. Absolutely. You're a reflection of your coach. So yes. Joey Bosa is going up there and saying that Derek Carr is soft. His coach said it all week.
If we hit him all week long,
he'll fold.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it.
All week long, it's good to say that. But this could be a good matchup, though, because I would like to see, because Herbert this year, which is, I want to talk about, he is struggling under pressure a lot. He's not playing like, last year he played so well under pressure. A lot of people like to bring it up. You can say he sucks under pressure. And I said that because I said that on my breakdown before the game. Charger fans, when they talk about his pressure stats from last year. And then the Raiders under pressure, he struggled, right? And he's struggling all year. His YPA is like 4.9 under pressure.
He's getting it out fast. He's getting it to a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it to a tight end.
But if you can get pressure on that and you can tackle that, bro, you can control that offense, bro. And if you're not the Raiders and can stop the run, then yeah. Because, that's what the Raiders did to him. Raiders blitzed him more than they ever had before. Blitzed anybody. And he got rid of the football. We'll see what happens here.
Yeah, because the way that they blitz, man, if they can't keep those flats covered, they're going to be in a lot of
trouble. Don't play cover zero. You can blitz him. You just don't blitz him cover zero style, because he's too smart for that. He's just going to throw it to Mike Williams over your head.
Yep.
All right. Last game we'll talk about. We got the Cardinals versus Browns, which brings up Baker Mayfield.
It doesn't just bring up Baker Mayfield. It brings up Kyler Murray.
Yeah, Kyler Murray, who's playing out of his mind, really.
Old teammates playing against each other.
Yeah, old teammates playing against each other. And Kyler Murray had his first down game, I would say, last week, playing against a tough 49ers team, but that's divisional. They've been playing. It's the same offense, same defense. They know each other. So since they know each other, that was a little bit of a tougher game for him, but he still played. He still has some good plays there. And he's playing at a high level, bro. His YPA is way up. That used to be a big problem for him, is his YPA. YPA is way up. He's just playing a whole lot better. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. But on the other hand, you got Baker Mayfield. Okay. And Baker Mayfield is playing with a torn labrum. Because he's an idiot.
Yeah, and his left shoulder. Tried to drop the boom.
You're a quarterback. Does anybody not watch Peyton Manning and Tom Brady when they throw interceptions? Did they not watch that as their kids or anything? Did they not see any highlights? That's what I always talk about. People talk about quarterbacks who are just – because they see all these quarterbacks these days who are hurt all the time. Let's talk about that first. Who's going to run over people. Look at Carson Wentz.
Burrow did it this week. Tried to run over a linebacker and had a throat contusion. Had to go to the hospital. Come on, bro. Slide.
Throw the ball away.
Slide.
Or something. I don't know. Like Peyton Manning would duck. Tom Brady's ducking. And just like if he throws an interception, somebody comes to block him, he's going to dodge. Because, I'm going to play the next play. Yeah, Baker Mayfield coming out there just putting his shoulder and then running where he can't get up, because you don't tackle. You're a quarterback, not a football player.
Hey, now. Hey, now. I'm not going to let you do that.
I mean,
that.
It's not a kicker.
I'm not going to let you do that.
It's not a kicker. I'm not going to say it's a kicker, but
not
come on,
let
bro.
You do that. I mean, can pitchers hit?
Can pitchers hit? They're still baseball players.
Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, the first one in, what, 100 years? 100 years? Yeah. But hey, they're still baseball players. I'm just saying.
All right, okay, well, I'm not going to let you slander. No. Move on. I'm not going to let you slander. No, I'm not going to let you do it. Move on.
Anyway,
Talk about their throws.
Oh, man. So, you know, Baker Mayfield, I mean, he's having problems of when this team goes down and they need him to make a play, he can't do it. That is his.
I don't know. I can't do that because of the way that the game ended last week. The Browns really should have won that game. So I can't let you go there. I can't let you play that right now. I can't let you do it. That should have been a win. And honestly, I'm really excited about this game because it gives us another opportunity to see what type of quarterbacks these two guys are.
I mean, I know what Baker Mayfield is at this point, man. I mean, he hasn't gotten better, bro. It's not like, I worried about Herbert getting better, but I mean, Herbert's gotten smarter. I don't know if he's gotten better.
Herbert's gotten smarter. I'll agree with you there.
And knows how to read the field really well now. He's reading the field like a quarterback should. So Baker Mayfield's just too short, bro. Like I was on Twitter and, you know, this dude was showing clips of him, and he couldn't figure out why he was not hitting the digs. And I just wanted to see him. And I just wanted to, bro.
He can't see it.
That's what it is. Like, you know, I was watching the Bears get ready for the Bears game, and he's missing Odell Beckham all the time over the middle. It's just he can't see it. So I don't know if he's, you know, Kevin Stefanski, everybody's like, his offense is great for him. Like, I don't know if it is. Because
he keeps calling those in routes.
The in routes, he can't see it. And of course, Baker Mayfield's not going to tell you he can't see it.
No,
but you can. I wish I could show you. You can. You just got to watch his eyes. He's like, is something there? Oh, it is. Oh crap! I'm late. Oh, I gotta get out. It's like every time. I know the place is there, but I can't see it. Is it there? Oh, there it is. Oh man, I'm late. Okay, I gotta get out. I can see it in his head. He's like, is it there? I just don't want to anticipate and throw it. I want to make sure first.
Yeah, that's that college mindset too. Is it there? Okay, I'm talented enough to get it, even if I have to double check. I can get it there in college.
Yeah, because I mean outside the pocket, he's still good, man. He's there with it's the digs and stuff like that and throwing over the middle. That's a struggle for him. And it always will be. And then he's not Kyler Murray or he's not Russell Wilson. So yeah, he's gonna need I don't know what they're gonna do with him. I just don't think that Baker Mayfield is ever gonna be like a quarterback. He's like gonna be like more like a Sam Darnold type of thing at this point, you know.
Interesting. Well, I'm gonna tell you to take the points and the over in the first game. I'm tempted, Marcus. I'm tempted to say straight money line on the Browns this week.
Oh, really?
I think this might be the week that because the Cardinals are the only undefeated team left. They're riding high. Everybody's feeling so good about Kyler Murray. I think that this is the week that maybe something sneaky happens. And it's not like the Browns are a bad team. They're a really good team.
Yeah.
So this is a tough defense for him to play against. Miles Garrett's going to be in his face 24/7. And I don't know if he can run past Myles Garrett.
He can't.
But
I mean, the Browns, they have a great pass rush. They do. They really.
Yeah. So I think this might be just the Browns making it so that there's no undefeated teams in the NFL. That's where I'm going to go with it. And I'm going to leave Kyler Murray alone because I think this is a perfect segue to get to our guy.
Exactly.
It's time.
So yeah. So we're going to bring on my man Mark Schofield. So listen, guys, check it out. All right, guys. So we got our first guest on the show. I mean, maybe ever. right? Chris, this might be our first
guest. He's our first, the first on the show.
this is our first guest right here. So definitely got a special guest, definitely a guy who looks into quarterbacks, watches them religiously, basically. I mean, as soon as Monday, I'm sure like Sunday night, I'm sure he's grinding that film. So
we get it rolling early. Yeah,
get it rolling Sunday night. So, you know, we appreciate the great Mark Schofield for coming on today. Definitely appreciate you joining us. And you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Right. So make sure you go follow him on Twitter there as well. And check him out. Like I said, he does great quarterback breakdowns, does about like a three play series where he goes through certain quarterbacks that had a great week. So definitely check those out. They're really awesome. And I really recommend it. You guys can learn something from him. So definitely check those out. So, Mark, definitely thank you for having coming on the show.
Well, guys, thanks for having me. And you're saying I'm the first guest?
Yeah, you're the first guest. Yeah.
That's a bit intimidating, man. I was, you know, it's like dinner time for me. I was going to kind of come in and bring my like B game, but you're telling me I'm the first guest. I got to step it up. No B games. I got to go A game tonight. Yeah, yeah, so, okay. I'm going to limber up a bit, stretch, and get rolling here. But I'm honored if you're going to tell me I'm the first guest. I'm incredibly honored. So thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to have you on here for a while because I know that you watch quarterbacks and, you know, you break them down. You kind of just don't tell narratives with it and just kind of tell the truth. So that's really what I appreciate about how you break it down. Cause you know, some people do, they kind of put their narratives into it and you just tell it how it is.
Well, here's my narrative on quarterbacks. Yeah. Playing quarterback is incredibly hard to do. I was really bad at it. And so I know what you're not supposed to do as a quarterback. And so that's my basic like worldview on it. That's my bias on quarterback play. Like, I know what you're not supposed to do. I know what it's supposed to kind of look like. And so, look, if you get to the point where you've started a game in the NFL, you're pretty darn good at playing quarterback. I don't care.
Yes.
Like if you stink at it, if you throw a bunch of picks, like you're better than 99.99% of the people that have ever lived. So you're pretty good to get to this point. And then we start, look, when you try to differentiate between tiers of quarterbacks or whatever, you have to get into the weeds a little bit. You have to really get into the nitty gritty on like ball placement and things like that, because you're talking about 32 people doing a job. So, you know, we kind of have to go down that road at some point, but it's hard. You're trying. I wrote today, playing quarterback is like being a doctor, right? You have to diagnose a problem, the coverage, you have to come up with a solution, but you're not doing it from like a cushy exam room where you've got like a patient sitting down in front of you. You're doing it in a field in front of 90,000 people with Aaron Donald trying to put you in a hospital. And so try doing that sometime. It's not easy.
Exactly. That's sometimes I try to, you know, express to fans, and sometimes like, he didn't hit that read down the field. Well, maybe, I mean, he couldn't flip his feet and then throw it because somebody's about to cream him. So like, there's a lot of things that happen in football, and you know, the other team plays defense too. I mean, that's kind of the big thing that, you know, a lot of people don't get. I mean, everybody's so offense, because, you know, I do my taped on my show with BD and nobody bothers him about anything defensive scheme, because people are like scared of that. They really just listen. But with offense, they're telling me everything that's happening. But with him, they leave him alone. And that's just the interesting dynamic with, you know, offense and quarterback. So,
I mean, look, everybody has a take on quarterbacks, right? Like, you know, I stay in my QB lane. Like, I go to people for edge rushers. I go to people for corners and safeties and things like that. Everybody has a take on quarterbacks because that's where your eyes are. Like, even if you're just watching a game with your buddies, like that's where your eyes are. And so everybody's got a QB take.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's get into some of these, some of the things you want to talk about. I mean, the first thing we want to talk about is the development of Kyler Murray. And I know you watched a lot of Kyler Murray so far this year, especially with all the big games that he's been having. Can you talk a little bit about his development and where are you seeing that growth from year two to year three?
Yeah, and I think it sort of starts with anticipation. And I know we're going to talk about anticipation a little bit, but one of the things that's really impressed me about Murray this year, you know, some of the throws that I've highlighted from his games, is the ability to make those anticipation throws. And, you know, there's different kinds of anticipation throws, right? Like, obviously, the one that's easy to see is, oh, he's thrown it before the receiver gets into and out of his break. Like, that's great. You need to do that, certainly. But you also need to anticipate windows. You need to anticipate throwing lanes. Like, when you've got zone coverages, you have to anticipate, okay, which throw can I make this throw into? Like, which window? Is it that primary sort of window between the corner and that, you know, hook defender? Is it the secondary window between the first hook defender and the second hook defender? Like, say you're throwing a dig route, an in breaker, or anything like that. you've got to be able to feel when you have to let the ball go to throw them open into those windows, and throwing receivers open is such a critical part of playing this position. I'm reading right now, highly recommended, Eyes Up by Terry Shea. Oh, wow. He coached Stafford. He coached Bradford. He coached in the NFL. It's an incredible book on playing quarterback, on coaching quarterback, things like that. You know, and he writes in here, if you wait until your receiver is open, you are too late. And so you have to be able to make those throws with anticipation. Whenever I talk about anticipation, I love to tell a story. Years ago, Landry Jones was starting for the Pittsburgh Steelers against the New England Patriots in a Steelers pass game. And Nance and Sims were doing the call. This was before Tony Romo time. Yeah. Romo was still playing. Sims was in the booth. And they talked to Antonio Brown, like, what advice did you have for Landry Jones? And the receiver said, if I see you throw it, it's too late. If I see the ball come out of your hands, it's too late. I'm going to get killed. And so as a quarterback, you have to anticipate those windows. And Murray has done a great job of that this year on their vertical concepts. He's anticipated those throwing lanes behind the second level defenders, on some of the vertical concepts along the boundaries. He's anticipating the hole shot. He had a hole shot to AJ Green back against the Titans in week one. One of my favorite throws this year, because so many teams are trying to trap that, right? Mm-hmm. You run that go flat concept. The corner's trying to read you. He's showing you that he's sinking with the vertical route. But if you throw that out route to the slot receiver, he's going to trap that for a pick six. Murray flashes ball, gets the corner to bite on the flat. Then he resets and throws that go route along the sideline with velocity, but anticipates it because you've got that safety rotating over. So Murray's ability to anticipate windows, anticipate throws, breaks, and things like that is a huge reason for this leap this year. And the other thing is this, look, there's obviously the athleticism, right?
Yeah.
But Murray has done a great job at balancing the ability to sort of break the pocket, escape, exit out the back door, flip his hips, make a ridiculous throw downfield with, I'm just going to move in the pocket. I'm just going to slide. I'm just going to climb a little bit. I'm going to create space. I don't have to vacate the pocket. I'm just going to create a little bit of space, stay within the structure of the pocket and make a throw. That's a hard lesson for athletic quarterbacks to learn. You know, when you've always been the best athlete on the field, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, right? You've had the ability, what, I don't like this look. I don't like this coverage. I don't like this route concept. I'm just going to pull it down and run. I'm going to beat everybody to the edge. I'm going to beat everybody to the end zone. Like, and sometimes, like, these two can still do it in the NFL. Yeah. But you also have to balance that with, sometimes I just need to stay within the structure of the pocket and make a throw. And Murray's done a very good job of that this year. So balancing his athleticism with some of the structures of plays and his anticipation are two of the big things I'm seeing from him this year.
All right. Chris, you got any follow-up questions?
Yeah, I got to ask. On that point, and that's been my biggest pet peeve with Kyler Murray, I don't know if it's just something I'm feeling, because we're seeing all the highlights that he's breaking pocket. He seems to be getting outside of the play, flipping his hips, making the throw to his left, placing the ball, incredible ball placement. It seems like we're seeing a lot of that in the highlights and what we're seeing on a daily basis from him on the major talking head stations. Are you seeing in the film that there is that much more development, that he is just sliding in the pocket?
Yeah. I mean, I think, Chris, there are certainly moments you can see on film where, look, we all know the stuff that's going to get blown up on Sunday on Twitter, on Monday mm-hmm. on, you know, First Take or whatever, is that moment where he breaks the pocket and, you know, makes a huge play, ridiculous play. The zero blitz play he had against Minnesota, where he's just retreating and throwing something ridiculous. Like, yeah, that's the stuff that's going to draw attention. But then you see other throws, and I'm pulling some stuff up now, where he's just moving in the pocket. He's just flipping his feet in the pocket. He's just flipping his hips in the pocket. He's not bailing. You know, he's got opportunities to do that, but he's just pulling the football down. He's just working through the coverage of the play, working through the concept and the route structure. Like, he had some throws against San Francisco. I'm looking at him like he had a throw on a 3rd and 14 situation where you might expect him to do something crazy, but no, he's just going to check the football down. You might expect him to do something wild in that situation or buy some time for a shot play downfield. And no, he's just going to check the football down. He's going to take what the defense will give him. Now, could he do more of that? Sure. But for an athlete like him, sometimes, you know, he's going to do the wild and crazy stuff. People will get excited about it. But we are seeing those results on film where he's just staying within the structure of the play, staying within the concept, taking what the defense gives him.
Yeah, that's big. I mean, that shows a lot of growth from him for sure. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, when he came out of college, you always felt that he wanted to be a pocket passer. I mean, you could always feel it. Like it wasn't something that he wanted to get out too much. You can feel that he believed that he's a pocket passer when he was in college. And I could tell that. So to see that growth from him is really excellent. So I do have a follow-up question for you. I mean, you kind of mentioned the pocket a little bit. I mean, you mentioned the pocket a lot, actually. Do you feel like a lot of people are getting away from, you know, the pocket is king and getting into like more like looking too much for a mobile quarterback? Because I know a lot of these quarterbacks that are coming out, you know, in this next draft class, a lot of them are like, basically they're mobile first, right? Yeah. They're not like, you know, even like the Spencer Rattlers, even Malik Willis, you know, those type of guys, they're not like pocket passers. They're going to have to get to the NFL and they're going to have to learn how to pocket, you know, be a pocket passer. Do you feel like, you know, people are getting away from that, even like, you know, on Twitter or the even draft evaluators? Do you feel like they're getting too much away from that, that, you know, belief that the pocket is king?
Yeah, and it's a hard thing to sort of walk because, you know, take it from the coaching standpoint first, right?
Yeah.
You have to work with the guys that are going to be coming out. And so when you see at the college level, so many offenses are sort of spread based. So many offenses are rooted in athletic concepts. So many offenses are relying upon athletic quarterbacks. Obviously, you know, the influence of the RPO game, the ability to use the quarterback as a threat in the run game, especially with so many defenses at the high school and college level, they're playing too high because they want you to run the ball. They're baiting you to run the football because one of the most insightful things I saw all of last year was the Huddle Blitz 21 clinic, a virtual football clinic. Mm-hmm. Coach Vass at Coach Vass on Twitter had a defensive coaches roundtable, right? And a bunch of guys that you probably recognize, whether it's, you know, Coach Kogan, whether it's Cody Alexander and others, and they're all talking about like what they do at the high school level. And it's, they play too high because they don't want you throwing the football. You know, they want you running the football, and it's the stuff you're seeing, you know, trickle up to the NFL a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And so what do you do as an offense? You involve the QB in the run game and you flip the numbers even more in your favor. So teams are relying on athletic quarterbacks at the high school, at the college level. These are the guys that are coming up. And so you're kind of having to work with these guys, and what are you going to do to put them in a position to be successful early? You're going to call some run concepts for them. You're going to move them around a little bit. I mean, look at how Shanahan tried to use Trey Lance in Lance's first start this week and do some stuff with him in the run game. So, I mean, that's part of it. I also think, look, we know it's a copycat. We know it's a wildly overreaction-based league, right? And so
absolutely.
You see a Kyler Murray, a Lamar Jackson, and you've got an owner in your ear telling you, we need that. Like, you're going to try to – you need to draft a quarterback. You're going to try to do that. It's the reason why Mac Jones came off fifth, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't the mobile guy. The other guys were the more mobile, like you can move them around, more athletic, better sort of traits. And so you see that influence as well. You know, as far as being an evaluator, this is one of the hardest things for me because I was, look, we weren't exactly wearing leather helmets when I played, but I'm a dinosaur, okay? And I'm used to the idea of 3rd and 7, you've got to make a throw from the pocket. Can you stick your feet at the top of your drop, hitch and throw the out route on time and rhythm? Like that's kind of the way Justice Mosqueda once had a tweet that was fantastic. You know, I'm in that generation that grew up watching Montana play, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the influence for me. The generation we're getting now, forget growing up watching Brett Favre. They grew up watching Mahomes. Like that's what they want to be. So that's what those kids want to do. And that's what we're used to seeing from an evaluation standpoint. But it's tough because at some point, you're going to have to make a throw from the pocket to win. Yeah. But if you've got the athletic ability of a Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson, maybe you throw the process out. You say, look, I'll take the results, whatever they are.
Yeah.
The problem is, what if you have the athletic ability of, say, a Zach Wilson or a Mac Jones, where you're not as athletic, where maybe, Saturday against the Citadel, you could escape the pocket and get to the edge. It's not going to work Sunday against the Jets. It's not going to work Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so you're going to have to make do with what you've got. So it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah.
But I do think the more we see, you know, teams playing too high pre-snap, try to dare you to run the ball. So you want that athletic quarterback that could be a factor in the run game. Teams will find ways to make it work. Teams will find ways to make these athletic quarterbacks work as they sort of fill out the rest of their quarterback and resume.
Yeah. And, you know, one comment I want to say that I feel like that's why Herbert is kind of like taking the storm a little bit of people, because he can win from the pocket. He'll check it down when he needs to. If he's getting blitz, he'll make the right decision. He's not really forcing anything. He's just playing quarterback. He's playing the position really well. And, you know, I saw a chart with him that called him boring on the other side, but he's like playing, you know, he's playing at a really high level, but he got called boring, you know?
Three touchdowns a game is boring, Marcus. Three touchdowns a game and zero interceptions is boring.
Yeah, Chris, exactly, man. If Justin Herbert is a boring quarterback, my heart can't take excited, okay? Because that dude can make ridiculous throws from the pocket. And Marcus, you remember Herbert at the Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah.
You remember, like, shy, reserved, quiet dude. Everyone was like, oh, man, I don't know about this guy in the locker room. We should have known then, right? Because what did he tell us at the Senior Bowl? He said, I'm reading books about being a leader. That A right there is the sign that this dude is self-aware, is going to get it, is going to figure it out, is going to do things to improve himself. So, I mean, the Herbert breakout, there's lessons through across the board in the evaluation process of quarterbacks when it comes to Justin Herbert. Obviously, look, the landing spot, the fit, the coaches around him are huge, right? Mm-hmm. I will keep banging the drum until it happens. Pep Hamilton deserves a head coach or an OC gig. Because as his quarterback coach, did a great job along with Shane Steichen, you know, the offensive coordinator, to get this kid ready to go. That's the first thing. Landed fit coaches, that's huge. The other thing is, we say it all the time, but it's so true with Herbert, scout the traits, not the scheme. Because that Oregon offense, man, did him no favors at
all. No, it did not.
We were all just kind of throwing our hands up, like, what are we going to do with this kid, right? Yeah. Like, if you dig in and you, like, watch every single throw, you can find examples of stuff that he's doing now in the NFL, but it was hard to find. So you have to dig into that. And the other stuff is, as much as I always say, like, quarterback is a leadership position, and it is, there's different ways to do it, right? Yeah. So people were saying that Herbert isn't this, like, rah-rah vocal leader type guy. Okay. What matters is when he walked into the huddle at Oregon and walks into the huddle now with the Chargers, did the 10 sets of eyes in that huddle stare back at him, believe in him? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's what you need. Like, you don't need to be Tom Brady screaming on the sidelines and throwing a tablet or a Microsoft Surface tablet, or then just get the guys to believe in you. And Herbert has that. And that's the kind of leadership that matters. And so there are lessons for Herbert for sure. But those are my three big takeaways.
Yeah. And, you know, leadership is different these days, too. You know, you don't have to be Jim Kelly and Dan Marino. Like, but I used to go watch some 90s stuff this summer, man. Like, they used to yell at everybody for everything.
Like, that doesn't work with everybody, right?
No,
like, you run in the huddle and start yelling at people, that's going to turn some people off. Right?
Yeah, like, especially nowadays, because that was kind of the mantra. That was the de facto way that you had to lead back in those days. You had to be that hard-nosed guy that was getting smoked by linebackers and defensive ends, and you had to stand there and take it. Yeah. And then when somebody screwed up, that was your turn to give it out. So
No, nowadays it's just do it with your play. Like, let your play be that leadership thing for you. And Herbert's doing that. And I think a lot of, like, these younger quarterbacks, you know, whether it's Mahomes, whether it's Kyler, whether it's Burrow, like, they're doing it with their play. I mean, I think the best example of leadership I've seen this year was, I think it was after the Vikings game when the Bengals beat the Vikings in week one. And Ja'Marr Chase is at the podium. He finishes his post-game press conference, and he gets up. Burrow sits down, and what does he say? I thought that guy was dropping everything.
Yeah.
Like, you mean to tell me that the rest of that team doesn't think, man, we want to go play for this dude?
Yeah.
Because after Ja'Marr Chase was getting ripped by all of us in the media, oh, he's dropping everything, can't make catches, he's a bust already, his quarterback sits down and basically calls everybody else out and gets his guys back.
Yeah.
Like, that's the leadership stuff that matters, I think, in today's NFL, more than just screaming at somebody because they screwed something up. Like, picking our teammates up as a quarterback, that's huge.
Yeah, Joe Burrow trusts me out, because every season mic'd up, he's like, don't cover zero me.
Yeah, which you got to love that from a quarterback. And if you're a quarterback, you want to get zero blitzed, right?
Exactly.
Pick up any playbook. It'll have the little progression reads under it. What do you do on zero blitz? Drift and throw a touchdown. That's the read. That's the read. You get zero blitz, drift and throw a touchdown. We were talking about Kyler. That's what he did against the Vikings. Got zero blitz, drift and throw a touchdown. That's the game today, kids.
Yeah, 100%.
Derek Carr, overtime week one.
Yeah. Same thing, Chris. Drift and throw a touchdown.
I do have one more thing to say before we move on. You nailed it with that comment. Kids, you grew up on Montana. I grew up on Favre. The other guys that grew up on Favre have either already retired or are in their 16th, 15th, 16th, 17th year in the league. Yeah. Like, all these kids coming up now, they're looking at Mahomes. They're looking at Lamar.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, like, a couple of years ago, Anthony Gordon was coming out of Washington State. And I remember I clipped this play that he made. He had a wide open crossing route, and he kind of moved in the pocket. And he tried to no-look it and, like, missed it by 13 feet. And I actually brought up that Justice Mosqueda quote. I was like, the kids that grew up watching Mahomes are coming, and, man, it's going to be fun. There'll be some ups and downs, but it's going to be fun because he missed that throw by 13 feet. But still, yeah, that's what it is. Like, these kids now, like, if my son's upstairs, he's 10, he's in fifth grade.
Yeah.
I'm a Patriots fan. You can see the banners over my shoulder. I'm a Tom Brady guy.
Yeah.
He's got a Lamar Jackson jersey hanging in his closet. Like, that's who he wants to be.
Yeah.
When he's running around with the street playing with his friends, he's Lamar. And I get it. That's what this next generation wants to be. And I think football is going to be great for it.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely.
All right. So I do want to talk about anticipation. You kind of did go into it a little bit. So, but I do want to talk about, like, what is that what makes an elite quarterback to you, is the high level anticipation, and who under 30 do you believe already might have that besides Patrick Mahomes?
I mean, Mahomes certainly has it. I mean, it's one of those traits that I think, look, if you can anticipate windows, anticipation and manipulation, I think, are the two traits that really sort of define an elite quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, with manipulation, if you could get a defender to do something he's not supposed to do because of what you do with your eyes or your shoulders or flash of the ball or whatever, that's elite football play.
Yeah.
And look, Lamar's doing that now. Dak's doing that now. Like, man, watch Dak, the out up against Carolina that he hit Amari Cooper on, because he flashes ball, gets the corner to bite, then flashes his eyes to the middle of the field to hold the post safety. Then he comes back and throws the out up route and drops in the bucket for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Even Lamar, in the past couple of weeks, you're seeing him pumping on out routes, moving guys, and then flipping his feet to throw a curl route in the middle of the field. Like, manipulation is huge for me. I mean, the three throws thing I do, if I could find a simple example of somebody moving a defender, that's immediately getting in. It doesn't matter. It could be like a 6-yard curl. I don't care. I'm throwing it in. I love it. So manipulation is one. And I do think anticipation is the up. Like, you've got to be able to, like, again, all the stuff we talked about, if receiver sees you throw it, it's late. If you wait to see the guy open, it's late. Like, windows close in the blink of an eye in the NFL. Ask Mac Jones. Like, Mac Jones is used to throwing to Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith. Now he's throwing to Jacoby Myers. I love Jacoby Myers, but the separation ain't there. So you better be anticipating these windows.
Right.
And so, yeah, you've got to be able to anticipate windows. As far as the guys under 30, you mentioned Mahomes, and certainly Mahomes. I think Herbert and Burrow are great at it. You know, Herbert doesn't need it because he's got a cannon, but he still can anticipate windows. I mentioned that go flat. He had one against Washington where he saw, once that corner had his hips parallel to the line of scrimmage, like he was going to trap the flat route, it happened in the blink of an eye. He was already ripping the whole shot. He didn't wait for the guy to clear the corner. He knew what he had, and he just ripped it. And he ripped it left side, left hash, right sideline, on a line, 25, 30 yards downfield. So do the math, Pythagoras theorem, right?
Yeah.
That's like a 45-yard throw. It's ridiculous. So Herbert certainly does it. I think Burrow does it too. With Burrow, it's more of a necessity. Because look, Burrow's arm isn't overpowering. He doesn't have the arm that Herbert or certainly Mahomes or some of these other guys do. So he needs to anticipate windows coming open, but he does a very good job of that as well. I think Murray's getting there. Dak, certainly, this is a strength in his game.
Yeah.
Before he got hurt last year, Dak had my favorite anticipation throw of the year.
It was against
Atlanta.
Yeah.
The Falcons one. Exactly, right? He's like, man, the third window on that dig route. And it's just like,
how did you even get that in there?
I don't know how you did that, man. I don't know how that was one of those ones, Marcus.
Once I saw that,
I'm like, all right, that's going in the video. That's going in.
He threw it so early. Like, he was still running his route. I feel like he was running up and he threw it. And then by the time he was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it was like some Matrix stuff, right? It's just like, you know, bullets are flying, like people are bending over. It's all weird, but somehow we got it in there. So, I mean, those are some of the guys under 30 that, like, when it comes to anticipation, yeah, they got it.
So, that throw might have come up a few times on the podcast already. We like those kind of the throws that being made.
Oh my God, yeah. I love that throw, man. I love that throw. But I do have another question for that. So let me ask you. So a lot of the guys you mentioned about that are young and are anticipating, besides Herbert, they're in like the year three of their offense. Do you think being in an offense longer Absolutely. With anticipation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Josh Allen is a prime example of this. I still think Josh Allen kind of, it's a bit more up and down with him.
Yeah.
He can do it at times. Like, it's not as consistent as other guys.
Okay.
But if you would have told me back when he was coming out of Wyoming that by his third year, even at times in his second year, he would still be he would be able to make some anticipation throws, I said, no way. I did not see that coming from that kid at all. The fact that he's able to do it, like, that speaks to Brian Daboll's coaching. That speaks to Josh Allen's work ethic, but it also speaks to the consistency in the same offense with the same coaches for 3 years, because he's at a point now where he knows that playbook inside and out. He knows everything. And at this point, with the way defenses are trying different things against him, he's now seen, I don't want to say everything, but he's seen almost anything a defensive coordinator can throw at him. And so, look, he still has moments where he knows, I have an absolute nuclear missile attached to my right shoulder. Okay? Like, his throw to Emmanuel Sanders on that touchdown Sunday night, like, that's just absurd. I mean, every time I do a video on him, I just say, look, this freaking guy, like him and Mahomes, is just this freaking guy. This is just disgusting. It's just absurd. These are aliens put on Earth to, you know, sort of hypnotize us with how well they can throw a football before they, you know, invade Independence Day style. But Allen is just ridiculous when he has the ability to make those throws, but there are also moments when he knows he has to anticipate windows, and he can do that now. Mm. He doesn't always do it, partly because he doesn't need to at times. But yeah, he can do it. And it speaks to what you were just talking about, Marcus, which is the more time you have in an offense and a system with the coaches, with the people around you, you're going to have that better feel. It's like that Dak throw that we were just talking about from last year. He doesn't make that his rookie year. He doesn't make it his second year.
Yeah.
But you can make it now because you've got that command of the offense.
Yeah, exactly. Because my prime example is Derek Carr, man. I mean, you know, Derek Carr. Yeah. I mean, he's been a tease in 2020. He started really anticipating a lot more. And now it's consistent.
It takes time because there are two things to playing quarterback that are unnatural in a sense. One is climbing the pocket, right?
Yeah.
You mean to tell me you want me to go closer to those guys? Those guys that are trying to kill me? Those guys are trying to, you want me to go towards them?
Yeah, sure. I'll do that. The faith in your offensive line that is needed.
It's an unnatural thing. Believe me.
Yeah.
The other one is anticipated, right? Because that's not open yet. You don't feel like it's open yet. You're back there and you're like, it's covered. It's covered. It's covered. You have to learn what anticipation is, what actual, you know, throwing a guy open is. It's an unnatural thing. You feel like, look, man, if I throw this, it's getting picked. No, it's not. This is the concept. This is the way it's going to work. You have to trust the concept. You have to trust your reading of things. Now, if you're thinking, you know, it's middle of the field open and you've read it wrong, it's middle of the field closed. Yeah. You might throw it right to the post safety.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out the difference between cover two and cover three. Sure. Mm-hmm. But you've also got to figure out those anticipatory windows and make those throws. Those are two unnatural things. Climb the pocket, anticipation throws into tight windows. But when quarterbacks figure that stuff out, that's when it all kind of clicks.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. All right. So keep moving here. Let's go to Lamar Jackson, who, you know, his biggest thing this year, I know it's always been a knock on him, is with throwing outside the numbers, right? It's been the knock. We saw improvement in 2019, his MVP season. We saw a little bit of a step back last year. But this year, I mean, he's totally taken another step as a quarterback, which I always thought he'd get there. Like, you know, a lot of, you know, we all know with what they said about him coming out. But that's another guy on tape. When you watched him in college, you could see that he was hanging, you know? So to see that he was hanging there, it really did work out for him that way. But can you talk about his improvement there throwing outside the numbers?
Yeah, and a lot of it is the mental side with Lamar. And look, if anybody still doubts that this guy can run an NFL offense or had the ability to run an NFL offense coming out of college, here's the book you need to read, Inside the Pocket. It's Bobby Petrino's X's and O's book. It's literally, kids, he's just like, forget it. Here's my playbook. I'm just going to write it. All the concepts, all the reads, everything. There it is. So have fun, kids. That's what Lamar was doing in college. Okay. He was running an NFL offense with progressions, with conversions, with all that stuff. If anybody's really curious, you could search for my at Mark Schofield thread and Lamar, because the year he was coming out, I pulled together all the stuff that people wrote. You got stuff in there from Derek Clawson, from Deontay Lee, from Kyle Krabs, but from Matt Bowen. Look, this guy's really good, but people kept doubting him. So that, you know, now he goes to the NFL. Well, he can't win if they're down by two scores. Okay, well, check that box. He can't win from the pocket. Well, check that box now too, because you're seeing him move defenders with his eyes. You're seeing him manipulate defenders. And what that's doing, it's giving him bigger windows to throw into outside the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always been more of a like touch thrower outside. Him and, yes, you know, Deshaun Watson are similar in the sense where they'll throw corner routes, they'll throw out routes, and it's more touch and placement than like pure velocity and ripping it. Mm-hmm. But if you could create bigger windows to make those throws by moving defenders, by getting guys out of position, that's going to help you. I mean, you look at the double move that he threw to Brown on Monday night. Now, Brown ran a great route for sure. He toasted the defensive back. But what does Lamar do? Flashes his eyes to the middle of the field, holds the post safety in the middle of the field. So when he finally comes to the outside to make that throw, there's no safety help. He's eliminated it with his eyes. And so he's done such a good job at using his eyes, his shoulders, pump fakes at times, flashing ball at other times to create bigger windows for himself on the outside. So that it pairs well with his touch, his feel for those routes. And so you put that together, you see the improvement outside the numbers.
Yeah, the improvement outside of numbers. I mean, he's basically, he's so lethal if he could just throw the ball wherever he wants to. So that's especially with his legs, because you got to decide what you want to stop at that point, especially when he gets Bateman back or, you know, some of his other guys healthy. It's going to be really, really tough, man, to stop him. And, you know, he's already in that MVP area. You know, I'm a big adjusted net yards per attempt, you know, like the last 10 years, top five is, you know, pick the MVP. And, you know, a lot of the guys you mentioned, I mean, they're in the top five right now. So they're in that real MVP race that people, you know, everybody gets a little hype early on, but like by the end of the year, everybody, you know, starts talking about the same five guys in the top five and adjusted net yards per attempt. So it always happens that way. And Lamar Jackson's there. Go ahead.
I got to say, what you see with Lamar, and we loved it coming out of college, you know, he was always a pocket guy. His first moves were, I'm going to climb the pocket to find the pass. I'm going to come, I'll even come backwards after I climb. I'll hop left, I'll hop right. He's trying to stay in the pocket to keep his eyes downfield and make a throw. What we struggled with when we were watching him at the beginning of his career is I felt his elbow was completely out of position on his throws. Have you noticed on his tape, has he made any mechanical changes to the way he throws the ball to the sideline?
What he's really done, Chris, is he's really just dropped everything. Like his release point used to be more up top, but he's really just dropped everything down where everything is almost by the ear, almost sidearm. Like everything's almost like this all the time. And I think at first, when I first noticed him doing that, I was like, I'm not so sure he should be doing this.
Yeah, that's my exact feeling.
But I see the ball placement and I'm kind of like, it's working. So I'm okay with it, right? Like I always, you know, mechanics, right?
Yeah.
In my mind, they don't matter until they matter. And what I mean by that is as long as the ball's going where it needs to be, when it needs to be there, and it's getting there on time and rhythm, I don't care how you do it, man. Yeah. Throw it between your legs for all you want. I don't care.
Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, exactly. Shot putting it, whatever. Throw it left-handed, bounce it off your helmet. I don't care. Just get the ball where it needs to be, when it needs to be there. But if it's not getting there when it needs to be there, and it's because of your mechanics, then yeah, we got a problem. I mean, look at Trey Lance right now. Trey Lance is, he's got a bit of an elongated throw in motion. He's very sort of, I'd say, wild with the lower body at times. And he misses throws as a result. And I know he's working on it. He's worked with Quincy Avery. He's worked with John Beck. I know he's going to tighten everything up in the offseason as well. But right now, there are some throws where the mechanics aren't mattering. For Lamar, it's not like he's missing stuff wildly because it's so, if this is working for him, I'm okay with it. I mean, I see, Chris, we're on the same page with how he's doing it. I'm just kind of okay with it right now because it's not really messing things up.
Yeah, that was my thing when Mahomes was coming out. I was like,
yeah, I mean, that's when I started saying it, Marcus. That's what I started saying, because remember draft Twitter? It was like, these mechanics will never work in the NFL. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, they will. As long as he keeps putting the football where it needs to be. I don't care how he does it.
Like, come on, you guys just can't ignore the throws.
Yeah. I mean, oh, man, his foot was in the wrong place. Yeah, and he also threw a 70-yard rocket back shoulder style.
Right stride. Right like, stride.
I don't care how he did it. We should be amazed that he was able to do it. But now we get caught up in, you know, the minutia. And that's what happens. So the life cycle of a draft quarterback, right? Yeah. Like we build these guys up in the summer. Spencer Rattler, QB1. Uh-huh. Now forget it. Spencer Rattler is undraftable. Which
he's on. He might be transfer portaling.
Yeah,
that's the rumor going right now.
I mean,
he's going to transfer out.
I mean, look, I'm coming from the DMV area. We're all excited about Caleb Williams, man. We'll say that.
Yeah.
But no, this is the life cycle of a draft quarterback. We build them up, then we find ways to tear them down. There was the mechanics with Mahomes, and we're all just like, you know, his arm placement, his launch point is wrong. It's like, no, look at the throw. Like, I don't care how he does it. Look at where he puts that throw. There aren't 12 people on this planet that can do that. And yep. He's going to be able to do it as a rookie. So calm down, people.
Exactly. All right, Mark. And we went kind of long a little bit, but you know, it's great, great conversation, man. I really appreciate it. Like a lot of perspective on, you know, quarterback play. That's why I wanted to bring you on. I really like how you look at quarterbacks. So it was great to have you on. You know, that whole conversation was awesome. Any last words, Chris, for Mark?
Mark, if you have any time, I do have one more quarterback I'd like to talk about with you.
Let's go.
We mentioned elongated motion in the throw, and we're talking about the more comfortable a guy can get in an offense, the better he's going to be at anticipating, reading the defense, putting the ball where he wants to put it. Are you worried at all about these rookies, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson? Are they going to have the opportunity to grow in an offense? I mean, Zach doesn't have the kind of throwing motion that Justin does. Justin has come up in a conversation with Marcus and I about how long his throw is.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all about the potential flop ability because they're not going to get the time potentially that they would need?
You know, I generally would be a little nervous with Fields, but I do think that they figured out in the past couple of weeks how to call plays for him better. You know, because when he made his first start against Cleveland, it was Matt Nagy's slant flat, curl flat, you know, West Coast, pure West Coast stuff. That's not what Fields' game is, right?
Yeah.
He's more of a vertical downfield passer. You look at that Ohio State offense he was running, routes converted 10 yards downfield, not at the line of scrimmage or 2 yards downfield. And so when he has more time to read things out and to make longer throws downfield, the sort of throw in motion isn't as big of an issue. And so I know teams, I talked to some NFL teams that were worried about the elongated throw in motion. I think it's an issue of scheme fit, putting them in the right offense to sort of make it work. And I think when they realize, look, you let him do some stuff downfield, you let him attack downfield, he's got enough velocity on throws so that when he's throwing a deep out route, the velocity is going to make up for any time lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when you're trying to throw 5 yard stick, 2 yard slant, you do this, that's going to matter. That
already late. Window, yeah.
You're already late. But when you throw it a deep out route, yeah, you might loop it a bit, but the velocity will carry you through. So I think Fields will be okay.
All right. Perfect, Mark. Like I said, thank you for coming on. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Check out, like I said, all his videos. Check out all his articles at touchdownwire.com. And like I said, Mark, appreciate you having us coming on with us.
Thanks so much, guys. This was a blast. Happy to come on anytime.
All right. Thank you. All right, guys. So I definitely hope you guys appreciated that interview. I thought it was awesome. You know, Mark gave a whole lot of insight. A lot of the stuff that, you know, we say, you know, here all the time. So maybe you guys don't think we're crazy. Yeah. Right. Yeah, dude, We're not alone.
Nope, not alone.
We're not alone.
Loved hearing him, man. I could listen to him talk for days. This episode went a little long, and I think you could tell that Marcus and I were a little interested in continuing that conversation.
Yeah, I had so many follow-up questions because he was saying so much stuff, and
I was biting my tongue. I wanted to talk so much more, but I knew it was gonna. We could have done that for days.
Yeah, for sure.
Hopefully, everybody enjoyed that because
yeah.
I would like to do that again.
Me too. I really like that. That interview and kind of just getting that other viewpoint of, you know, the quarterbacks and, you know, him talking about Kyler Murray in the pocket, you know, like I haven't really got to watch Kyler Murray that heavy, you know, and him talking about that. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's probably why he's playing better. Right.
I hope for Kyler's sake that he can continue that.
Yeah,
I really do. I hope for Cliff's sake, too, because listen, man, I got to stick with my guns. Kyler and Cliff are going to run out of time if they don't stay the course.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I think they'll be fine. I think that the Seahawks are down. They ain't got Russell Wilson. So, you know, he's out.
Seahawks might be down, but the Rams
and the Niners are down.
Niners.
I think the Cardinals have. They got to worry about the Rams.
Offense is down. They absolutely got to worry about the Rams. But they stole the first game of the season against them. So do they really right now? Pressure's on LA.
Yeah. So I think they'll be fine in the West. I think they'll squeak that out. They get that first playoff appearance for Cliff and Kyler. I think that'll happen. I think that'll be happening for them. But you know, it is, like I said, it's a different perspective. Here's some things. Here's some different stuff. And then, ASU's on a roll, right? Right, Chris?
Hey, man, don't land in a trap. Don't land in a trap. You're playing well. You got Utah. Let's go. Just do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say right there. Got to just do what they got to do. Keep them in line, Herm. Let's keep going. 18's not low enough. We got an opportunity to steal the Pac-12.
I know, bro. The Pac-12 is for the taking.
Steal the Pac-12 and – who knows? Maybe they could sneak their way into the conversation.
Did they play USC?
Sure. They play USC and they play Oregon.
Oh, wow. In the season.
I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah. So,
yeah, they beat Oregon, bro. They'll have a chance to get up there, I think.
Yeah. I got to double check the schedule. I don't know if we got Oregon. I don't know, but
they're going to put Alabama in. So Alabama's taking somebody else's spot. That should be there. You know they're going to force Alabama. You know they are. Alabama lost. Let's see if they're still 4 or something like that. Even though they lost to Texas. A&M's not ranked. Shouldn't they go like, they should drop to like 10. They got to drop. You lose to an unranked team. You got to drop. I don't care what conference they're in. SEC. So it's, they could, let's just, they're still Alabama. So even though I love Bryce Young, bro.
I was wrong. There is no Oregon on the schedule.
Oh, there's
USC, but I mean, we're really at the point where, I mean, it's Utah, Washington State, USC at home, at Washington, at Oregon State, home versus
Arizona. At Oregon State. Oh, God. And that's November?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So
that is like the home of the upset. Is Oregon State in Corvallis. This is like, I swear, every Pac-12 team goes in there and they're 10-0 and they go into Corvallis and it gets a 3-8 Oregon State team and they lose. I don't know how that's the trap game, Chris. I don't even know if it's this way. That's the trap game with ASU's 9-1. All the Oregon State hasn't won a Pac-12 game yet and they go into Corvallis and, you know, for some reason, or it doesn't matter how good the Oregon State team is, it's packed with Oregon State fans. And they're just going crazy, and it's cold, and you're not used to it being cold because you're from Arizona, and it's just that's sick. Why couldn't they play them like in September? If I was Herm, like, you can't believe we're gonna say September before the Pac-12 championship. God, that makes me sick. I don't know how many times I've watched ASU be really good and then go into Corvallis and lose. It's happened.
Hopefully, hopefully it's not this year. Hopefully this is it. Hopefully we can just leave it at one loss, Marcus.
That was basically the whole Todd Graham era, bro. Todd Graham would be like,
to
win the Pac-12, then he'd go to Corvallis and
they lose.
I hate that place. All right. But it's true. Like, even like the good USC teams used to go in there and lose. They'd be like, Mark Sanchez would go lose. So the Mark Sanchez and all those dudes. what is that place? All right, guys. So that's us for the week. I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode. We really loved it.
We did.
So hope you guys did learn something from us. Make sure you guys check it out. Follow us on Twitter at TheMarkJohn, NFL for me, at King Manelos for Chris, and of course the show itself, ALPA_QB1. On Twitter. And you know, Instagram too, ALPA_QB1 for Instagram. You know, we got the reels going now. So
yeah, here we go. We're stepping our game up.
And then
interviews, reels, we're stepping it up.
Yeah, we're stepping it up here, man. We're stepping it up. So interviews, reels, and then you know, make sure you guys go to Facebook and follow us there. A little pocket awareness on Facebook. And then of course, hit the subscribe button. And you're on Spotify, hit the download button. All right, guys, we'll see you later.